sees it happening. And he withdraws himself. Before unnecessary argument between friends occurs, the prudent person stops that. And the simple person, through either naivety or stubbornness or aggressiveness or whatever their reason is, they push on and on until in the end they're punished, says the verse. You know what the word punished is here? The word punished means to inflict a penalty, especially a fine. Do you know what the fine is that the person pays in this verse? You know the penalty that they pay? They pay, brothers and sisters, the fine of a ruptured friendship. That's a high price indeed. And so the lesson of the proverb is that those that value friendships take due thought for the future consequences of their actions. They seek to preserve their friendships and not to endanger them by foolishly walking into a subject that will only hurt and damage the relationship that they have, the one with the other. They seek to avoid that. And then verse 13 says, and this is a stranger proverb still in its way really, take his garment that is surety for a stranger and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. Now you see, this is a proverb that's been used before as well. This is Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 16. But now here it is again in the 27th chapter being used all over again. Now what is this all about? Verse 13, take his garment that is surety for a stranger. Well, come back to chapter 17 just for a moment. I think there's a wonderful principle, in fact, in this verse. Now, in Proverbs 17, we have the teaching of Proverbs on the subject of suretyship. The word suretyship in the Authorized Version simply means what? Being a guarantor. Acting as a guarantor for somebody else. Now, you see what verse 17, chapter 17 says, and in fact in verses 17 and 18. See how it brings these two ideas together. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A man void of understanding striketh hands, and becomes a guarantor in the presence of his friend. Now you see this remarkable juxtaposition of ideas here in these two verses. On the one side it says, friends stick together through thick and thin. Doesn't matter what the trouble is, friends remain together and they help each other. And then almost in the same breath, in the very next verse, it says, don't ever be a guarantor for a friend. Only a fool does that. Isn't that remarkable? One verse says how wonderful friends are as they stick together, and in the other verse, don't ever guarantee your friend. Now why would it say that? Why would it bring those two ideas together? Do you think that this is a counsel or being exhorted to not be generous towards our friends? Now, I think that the lesson of this verse is not saying that we oughtn't to help our friends, but it's counsel against a blind guarantee that could ruin both people and destroy the friendship in the process. In fact, probably friends would be particularly susceptible to the dangers of this sort of thing. Look, I'm in a spot of bother. I wonder if you'd act as a guarantor to a little debt I've got. Now, says Proverbs, that's actually not a good idea even for friends. Now, if it's not a good idea for friends, then is it a good idea for someone you don't know? Now it says, well, it would be even less of a good idea, really, wouldn't it? For someone, come and look at chapter 11. Now chapter 11 makes it quite clear, really. What do the Proverbs teach concerning the idea of guaranteeing not a friend now, but becoming guarantor for a stranger? Well, Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 15 says, he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. Which is quite a nice little expression, really. So it's really, if we change that word to guarantee, we would have, he that is a guarantor for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth guarantees is guaranteed. So But really what it's saying is that imagine you see that you come to the judge, and that the people come before the judge and they say, I'm going to act as a guarantor here. So you'd say, okay, well, who's the debtor? And the debtor steps forward. How much is your debt? Oh, that big, right? Okay, just write that down. Now, who's the guarantor? Oh, I am here, right? So you come forward now. Now, do you know the debtor? Oh, no, I've never met him in my life before. And so you are going to guarantee this man's debt, and you've never met him before. That's right. Well, says the proverb, it's going to hurt you. You'll sting for that, won't you? You'll be broken for that. You should never, ever become a guarantor for a person that you don't know. Proverbs says you shouldn't even guarantee friends. Now, I come back to Proverbs 27. Now, remember, what's the context of our proverb? And the answer is, of course, we're talking in the context of friendships. So what's verse 13 teaching? Well, you see, I think that what it's saying is this. The proverb says, take his garment that is surety for a stranger. So what happens is, when the two parties come before the judge, so the one person says, well, I'm going to be the guarantor, and I pledge all of my worldly belongings as part of the guarantee for the debt of this other person I don't know. What the judge says is, okay, that's fine, I'll have the belongings now, thanks. I'll take your garment now. I'll hold you to your obligations now, because you've been foolish enough to become the guarantor for a stranger. So I think the teaching of the proverb is this, now let's bring it to friendship, is that too much friendship extended to a total stranger is unwise. Friendship is a principle that grows over time, that needs to be tested and measured. We should not expect to enjoy close friendship with others until we've proved worthy of it, and nor should we extend the most intimate benefits of friendship until we truly know the person that we are seeking to become friends with. And so the lesson of this proverb is that a person who's foolish enough to extend the principles of friendship too early should be held to their obligations. They've rushed into it. They haven't been measured enough in the development of that friendship. Friendships are precious things, brothers and sisters, and they ought not to be taken lightly, nor entered into quickly. Verse 14 says, he that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, shall be counted a curse to him. You know, there are sort of the different people in the truth, aren't there? There are those that we might call morning larks. They arise early in the morning. And there are those called night owls. They tend to go to bed late at night, and therefore their rising is not quite so early in the morning as the morning. And then I suppose that there are some who are sort of a combination of both. They go to bed early and they still get up late. We're all different, you see, as to what's the best time of the day for us. But, you see, I think the principle of this verse is this, that the idea of early in the morning here in this particular proverb is that it's not a good time. Not a good time for what? Well, it's not a good time for what the friend is doing. So what happens is you're fast asleep in your bed, the door bursts open, in comes your friend, slaps you on the back, hello, how are you today? And it grates. It sort of irritates, doesn't it? In other words, an over-jolly heartiness at the wrong time. The lesson of the proverb is that good friends learn tact and sensitivity in dealing with one another. They're alert to the feelings of each other. They know how to read their friends. You know what I mean by that? They know how to read their friends' moods. And the lesson of the proverb is, exaggerated praise or noisy flattery are not the marks of true friends. True friends don't need to loudly protest their love for each other. They already know that. They're sensitive and they're tactful in the maintenance of their friendships. A little proverb that says, The man who hails you Tom or Jack and proves by thumps upon your back how he esteems your merit is such a friend that one had need be very much his friend indeed to pardon or to bear it. Now we need to be careful, don't we, as to the way in which we handle our friendships. And here's another care that needs to be particularly noted in verse 15. Because it says there, a continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Now, if you come back for a moment to chapter 19, we have what appears to be a similar proverb, and so it is, but with one slight addition. In Proverbs 19, we've really sort of already had this proverb before. It says there, a foolish son is the calamity of his father, and now in chapter 19, verse 13b, we could call it, we have our proverb, the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. Now, that's not quite what Proverbs 27 says. You notice that Proverbs 27, coming back to it, verse 15, has made an addition. It's not just a contentious woman and a dropping. What verse 15 has added for us in this proverb here in chapter 27 is the time or the circumstance of the weather. You notice that? It's a very rainy day. So what we're being told in Proverbs 27 and verse 15 is this. You see there's rain on the outside and there's rain on the inside. The one prevents us from going abroad with comfort, and the other unfortunately prevents us from staying at home in peace. The one rain really only wets to the skin, actually. The other seems somehow to wet to the very bone. You know, you can have an argument with a neighbour, it's like a sharp shower. It's over and it's gone. But this is a ceaseless downpour. And there's no means of shelter. Now, by the way, before our sisters should think that we are unpleasantly referring simply to the female of the species, it doesn't actually, in Proverbs 27, it doesn't actually mention a wife, does it? It simply says a woman, a contentious woman. And you see, in biblical times, that could be an aunt or a mother-in-law or it could be anyone who was in the household. And of course, in the ecclesia, we're the bride of Christ, aren't we? So we're all part of the woman of the house. So therefore, the spirit of this proverb could in fact apply to anyone in ecclesial life. But I think perhaps there is a special reminder in verse 15 that marriage is a special friendship, isn't it? Of all the friendships that we have, marriage is a special one, and the lesson of this proverb is that it can be undermined by certain types of behavior. This spirit of ceaseless criticism withers friendship. Sometimes this happens in ecclesial life, you know. Someone will get a bee in their bonnet about a particular subject or a particular problem. It's not that the problem may not be real or true, but the real problem is they'll never give up on it. It goes on and on and on and on. And friendships are blighted by that sort of spirit, whether in a marriage or within the bounds of ecclesial life. There comes a time when a matter ought to be dropped. I've seen situations where an ecclesia has taken an ecclesial vote on a matter, and you think, at last, the issue is over and gone. No, it's not. No, it's not. Next Sunday, the dripping starts again. This ruptures friendship, doesn't it? It doesn't help. And verse 16 goes on to say, it says, whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind, and the ointment of his right hand which purveyeth itself. I think the NASB is quite good here. It says, he who would restrain her, or the Amplified Bible, whoever attempts to restrain her might as well try to stop the wind. You know what happens when you try and stop the wind? You hear the wind whistling through, so you shut the window, but there's still cracks there. And all that seems to happen is the wind roars louder and shrieks through the little openings that are left. It makes a bigger noise. The more you try to restrain it, you see, it's just like trying to restrain the contentious woman of these verses. And says the verse, and the ointment of his right hand, which bereath itself. Now there's a nice old English word. You see, what used to happen in biblical times is that the anointing oil that passed upon the body was poured into the right hand, you see, and the right hand would then anoint the body. And once it was all rubbed off, the hand would appear to be clean, wouldn't it? But the thing is that you could still smell the ointment. It bereathed itself. It called out from the hand. It looked like it had disappeared, but the scent reveals what has been done. And the word bereathed, by the way, means literally that. It means to call out. So you see, I think the lesson of the verse is that the nature of a quarrelsome woman in the household eventually cannot be kept secret. It calls out. And it's actually an unwelcome scent, isn't it? Constant criticism destroys friendships. We need to be careful about that. And by way of contrast, and our concluding verse, verse 17, how wonderful this is. Verse 17 says, "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the counsel of his friend." And so here, by way of contrast now, is the wonderful privilege and the tremendous benefit of good friendship in the things of the truth. You see, here in this verse is the spirit of mutual debate, the vigorous testing of one another in the healthy competition of friendship, the spurring of one another on in spiritual things. Here is the bracing effect of friendship in the healthy interchange of spiritual thoughts. Mind you, of course, what the verse presupposes is that it is the striking of godly minds, the one against the other, that stimulates our spiritual growth. And in the striking of godly minds, the one against the other, like iron against iron, both are made keener, both are improved by the mutual experience of their friendship. And so true spiritual friendships are those which allow for the benefit of testing thought and sharpening principle upon and with each other, that we might grow together in the truth. How wonderful they are, brothers and sisters, the benefit of true friends. Even kings need those, you see. In the words of a hymn, "Brethren, let us walk together in the bonds of love and peace." Can it be a question whether brethren should from conflict cease? 'Tis in union hope and joy and love increase. Then let each esteem his brother better than himself to be, and let each prefer another, full of love, from envy free. Happy are we, happy are we, when in this we all agree.